time for You Oughta Know, a weekly conversation about all things automotive with your host, Toby Edmonds.
Well, what do you think about that? That's the sound. Can you recognize that engine?
I'm blown away. That's awesome. What a great job. That's so cool.
Okay, well, welcome back, Toby. And you've been all over the place. You've done a variety of things. You've recovered your voice. And now we're here at the toward the end of summer with another edition of You Oughta Know. Did you have particular topics you wanted to bring up today? I can probably find a few, but let's start with you.
I was going to say, I was actually thinking about talking about motor oil. Okay. As we're going into the fall season, usually people will use the seasons as a way to kind of, indicators for car maintenance. And so, you know, springtime is very popular. Fall time is very popular, which also happens to coincide with the times of year in which Alaskans also will change over their tires too. So, you know, as we're heading into that season for car maintenance, and I'm sure it's probably starting to get there on everybody's mind as we kind of progress through this start of school / hunting season / fair time. I'm sure it's kind of getting up there in everybody's mind.
Sure. Okay.
I get the question quite commonly, what's the difference between conventional and synthetic motor oils? As I'm sure most people with newer cars have noticed, they are newer manufacturers are requiring the use of synthetic oils in their engines. And so I'm sure everybody notices the difference in the price tags between the conventional and the synthetic motor oils, but maybe not necessarily the difference in the oil itself. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today. What's the difference between a conventional oil and a synthetic motor oil? And I know that you're familiar with the synthetic motor oils, Mike.
Yes, because I buy lots of it to go into my vehicle.
You have one in particular, yes, that does take quite a bit of synthetic motor oil for sure.
And, you know, I guess whenever we talk about this, I go back to there's a spectrum of different kinds of oils, and people have known about what it probably is called normal oil for a long time. Now we have all this synthetic stuff. And of course, there are the myths about particular using things like mashed bananas in a Dershowo, a Citroën vehicle of great note back in the day when you're going across Africa and you run out of oil, you just smash up some bananas and put them there in the crankcase and everything is fine. So
I'm going to tell you right now, I would have loved to have been there to see that work.
Well, okay, a lot of myths, urban and rural, et cetera. Let's take away the myths that are about synthetic oil. I'm always faced with the problem walking into a parts store and looking at all the stuff. I can remember asking and saying, well, okay, I can see these have different names, different prices. What's the difference?
You know, we've been over the rating system before, but we're going to kind of keep this a little bit more basic in its explanation. The main difference between, you have five different groups when it comes to motor oils. You have the group one and two, which are conventional motor oils. And then you have groups three, four, and five, which are synthetic motor oils. This is information that's not necessarily given to you on the front part of the bottle. It's something that you're going to have to look at on the back side of the bottle. Okay. Oil is not as regulated as people would like to think. The term synthetic is actually kind of a very loose term. Most manufacturers would like to see the word synthetic applied only to oils that are not petroleum based, which is not true. In fact, group three generally, even though it's considered a synthetic oil, it is always going to be petroleum based. So you have groups one and two, which is a petroleum based, what is known as your conventional oil. That's your regular run of the mill. Generally, most people associate it with a 5W30. Okay. And it was used in engines, mostly domestic engines, very successfully for a very, very long time. As technology increases and as engineers get a little bit more fancy in their engine designs, they're looking for a better flow rate throughout the system. And that's where synthetics come into play. When you take a bottle of 5W30 conventional and a bottle of 5W30 synthetic and you pour them out in a regulated temperature, they're going to behave very, very similarly. Where you're going to see the difference is over extended use. A 5W30 conventional oil, very, very commonly will have additives put in there to make them behave differently in different temperatures. So if you take your 5W30 conventional oil, there can be, and break it down, there can be many additives in there to make it behave differently when it's colder out, which means that it will help it flow better when it's colder out, or when it's really, really hot out, we'll thicken it up to provide better protection for your engine. That engine oil, I'm sure as most people know, conventional motor oil, it breaks down faster over time. So even though when the oils are brand new, that 5W30 conventional is going to behave very, very similar to a 5W30 synthetic, where you see the difference is after that engine's been ran a while.
Okay.
And most of those additives in a conventional oil will disappear very rapidly after the engine has been ran for not even a couple hundred miles. So if you take a 5W30 conventional oil, put it in your engine, run it for, let's be generous and say 1,000 miles, and take it out, you're going to notice that it behaves very, very differently after you remove the old engine oil. Obviously, you're going to see a difference in color, but where you're going to see is the flow rate. Mm-hmm. Now, a 5W30 synthetic not only has the chemical properties of, you know, to help it flow at certain rates throughout that engine, depending upon the temperature, but quite typically they also use a lot of additives for cleaners too.
Okay.
So that 5W30 synthetic engine oil, because I do have a lot of people ask me, well, can I just make up for, you know, not using a synthetic motor oil by just changing my conventional oil a lot more?
Mm-hmm.
In theory, that is correct, but like I said, where you're going to see a lot of the differences over time is also you have a lot of cleaners that are just not going to be present in the conventional motor oil.
Okay.
And in a lot of newer vehicles, having that cleaner in there is very, very valuable and absolutely necessary.
Okay. Okay. So, price. I still come back to price. There are some bottles, cans, and other containers that have all kinds of gold lettering and premium descriptions and all the rest of it. That's in some cases you can pay twice as much for a container. Are you getting twice the quality? What?
In a lot of cases, yes, you are.
Okay.
When it comes to oil, you definitely do get what you pay for. When you take two bottles of 5W30 synthetic and you set them side by side.
Okay.
Both of them are 5W30. Both of them are synthetic motor oils. But as you noted, you could see a very drastic price change in between those two bottles. You know, you could be dealing with anywhere from $7 a quart all the way up to, I've seen synthetic motor oil go all the way up to $34 a quart. It can be very expensive. And at that point in time, what you're paying for is that company's formula. You're paying for the additives. You're paying for the secrets that they have to keeping that oil lasting as long as possible, providing the superior amount of protection for your engine, providing the right amount of protection and viscosity required to keep your, you know, very fast moving metal parts from touching. Because that's the job. One of the jobs of an oil is to provide that cushion in between those very quick, very fast moving pieces of metal that are rotating inside of your engine. I've said this before too. Really, what you want to go for is whatever rating is published in your owner's manual.
Okay.
And you know what? Under a lot of circumstances, it's going to be very painful to buy that bottle of oil. But you want to know what's even more painful? Having to pay for an engine before it's actually you know, past its prime, because that right amount of protection was not provided for that engine during its lifetime.
Now, what I've also noticed is that back in the day, I remember numbers like 3,000, change your oil every 3,000 miles. And sometimes today, that's been extended much longer.
Yeah, we are seeing recommendations of upwards to 10, even 15,000 miles in between oil changes. Even though as I sit here and I'm touting the superiority of a synthetic engine oil, even I'm not comfortable with saying go 10, 15,000 miles in between oil changes. Do I think that oil, the technology in oil, has advanced a lot over the last year, you know, 10, 15, 20 years? Absolutely, it has. But am I ready to take that chance with my engine and go 10, 15,000 miles? No, I'm not. I would generally recommend, you know, if you're running a conventional motor oil, especially if maybe you're not particularly paying for the best mm-hmm. conventional motor oil, I would absolutely say every 3,000 miles. With a synthetic motor oil, you could probably, what I generally run in my personal vehicles is every 7,000 is what I do. And I think that most, because everybody's aware of the time and mileage, you know, it's 7,000 miles or 7 months or 3,000 miles or 3 months. What I think most Alaskans are most familiar with is more mileage based, because we do drive a lot. You know, it's not like, so a lot of cities down in the lower 48 where, you know, you really only drive maybe 4 or 5 miles a day. You know, we do drive more than the national average up here in Alaska. So most of us are familiar with the mileage based oil change than the time oil change. But you do still need to be aware of the fact that it is a mileage based as well as a time based, because even if that engine oil only has 500 miles on it, over time, without it, just by sitting there, it will still break down.
Okay, so back in the day also, I can remember that it seemed that the crankcase had more breathing pipes than they do today. I guess I have this as an image I have. I'm saying, okay, pour the oil in, and obviously in the crankcase, the area and other parts that are lubricated by the oil, that's pretty much sealed all up. But there is also the filler pipe that's used. And I seem to remember that was, how sealed was that pipe?
I'm assuming you're referring to the crankcase ventilation system?
Yes.
Actually, the crankcase ventilation systems can come in many different forms, but they are still a very important part of an engine. Audis, Mercedes are the two that particularly come to mind, because they do actually have a very unique and very complicated ventilation system to them that can also be very problematic, especially in the winter months. If you are not super great at maintaining your engine oil, you know, over time it does get moisture in it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And what happens to moisture when it freezes? It turns to ice. So
right.
It is possible for your crankcase ventilation system, which does pretty much exactly the way it sounds. It provides ventilation for your crankcase, which is the lower half of your engine where the oil actually sits. So during the winter times, it is not uncommon for us to see engines that will, when on startup, when it's really, really cold outside and it's been sitting outside, will have many, many different, very undesirable starting qualities. So either they won't start or they do start, but oil goes everywhere, massive oil leaks. And what's happening is because of neglect and lack of oil changes, that crankcase ventilation system is frozen.
Oh.
Because of the water that is in the system, contaminants.
Sure.
And it will freeze and cause all sorts of really nasty, ugly problems. And once that starts to occur, unfortunately, you're kind of left with the only choice you really have at that point in time is replacing the entire system, not just the system, not just the hose or the pipe that is actually
plugged up. You're talking about the ventilation
system. Yeah. Okay. And it can be very complicated there. It is also a very expensive, very ugly job to do. So that's yet another reason why you want to make sure you're maintaining your engine by doing regular oil changes with the manufacturer recommended oil to prevent problems like that.
So my memory is correct. The earlier ventilation systems were much simpler.
Much simpler, a little bit more easy to access, okay. a little bit easier to fix on a weekend. We've really kind of moved past that on a lot of newer engine designs. Like I said, you have to remember that, you know, each manufacturer is different in how they design it. I'm sure some are actually very simple. It's just obviously due to the fact that I deal with imports, that's the area of my expertise, and that's what I see the most.
Okay. So, of course, there's the classic questions. What happens when you mix and match and you're down the road and you're down a little bit on oil, you want to add some oil, and there isn't the oil that you normally put in there, so you say, okay, well, what do I do?
Any oil is better than no oil. Okay. So even if you have to mix and match, say you're out in Glen Allen, Alaska, and you pull the dipstick on your brand new Toyota, and you see for some whatever reason you're down a quart and a half. You go into the gas station, and lo and behold, they do not have your particular brand of 5W20 synthetic energy conserving engine oil. You're forced to buy just the regular 5W30 conventional. Most engine oils today are designed to mix. So it's not like you're going to experience immediate problems. Like I said, some lubrication is better than none.
Okay.
So if you have to top off with an engine oil that is not necessarily recommended by the manufacturer, but you need to do it because it's in a pinch, by all means, that's perfectly fine. Where you start to run into problems is where you continue to top off until the majority of the engine oil is is not necessarily the spec that you need or is desired. So absolutely, it's perfectly acceptable to top off, especially in emergency, with a motor oil that is not necessarily on that list of recommended motor oils for your engine.
Okay. So the oil has done its job. It's tired. It's time to remove it. You take it out. Is there any use for the motor oil other than finding a disposal place that collects used motor oil?
Some places will run waste oil burners. Mm-hmm. My shop actually has one. They are, they burn the waste oil as a means of heating a specific area. There might be some other uses out there for waste oil. Generally, most of the time it's disposed of though. Okay. Some oils, you know, when you dispose of it, they're recycled. It is possible to get recycled oil. It will be reclaimed by manufacturers and they will recycle it, clean it up, run it through a process, and then put it back out on the shelf for you to purchase. So it is possible to buy recycled engine oil. I'm not necessarily convinced on it quite yet, but I do see a promise. You know, it could be promising in the future as technology advances.
And so all of the formulas that have all of these kinds of different chemical things in them, how dangerous is the oil? Should you wash it off if you have immediate contact with your skin or something? What's going on there?
It's not like it's going to burn you or anything crazy like that. I mean, obviously, if you take a bath in it, which has happened to me on more than one occasion, when that drain plug comes out a little bit quicker than I thought it was going to, you want to wash it off, but it's not something that's going to harm you, have any immediate side effects on you or cause nasty skin burns or anything like that. No.
Okay. Well, and of course, we need to at least say a few words about filters, because the oil that's running in there doesn't just stay in its own little place down, but flows through a filter and then back into the crankcase.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And once again, oil filters can be very, you get what you pay for. The fact of the matter is that maintaining pretty much any newer modern engine is not cheap. But at the same point in time, it, once again, you get what you pay for. So there are different degrees of oil filters. They are not necessarily created equally. Say you pull the same oil filter for a 2004 Toyota Corolla. You set them side by side. From the exterior, they may look exactly the same. They have, you know, they're the same shape, the same size. They screw on the same way. But when you cut those oil filters open, that's when you're going to start seeing differences, because on the inside of that oil filter, it looks like a paper accordion. And as the oil flows through the system and flows in and out of the oil filter, it's that paper filter, that paper cartridge on the inside that is responsible for filtering out impurities, any chunks of things that aren't supposed to be in there. Because as an engine wears, you know, you will get metal flaking in the engine, and redistributing that back throughout the engine is undesirable. So that filter filters it out. There are different grades of oil filters, and you want to make sure that you buy a good quality oil filter. And the question becomes, how do I know what is a good quality engine oil filter? And, you know, unfortunately, that's a really tough one for me to answer. Because it can be very difficult. I mean, when you're in the industry, I mean, you generally know, you know, what brands are acceptable and what provides a better filter rate, which ones will last longer, which will actually do the job that it's supposed to do. But that's not necessarily easily communicated to somebody who's maybe wants to go into the parts store to buy one themselves. So at that point in time, you're kind of left up to the whims of perhaps asking the person at the parts counter and just kind of hoping that you get a knowledgeable one. A general good rule of thumb is anytime you're looking at, you know, an oil filter, and you have a range between $2 for an oil filter and $15 for an oil filter, you kind of have to ask yourself, why is this one only $2?
Okay.
The other option is what? Go ahead.
Well, I'm thinking I very often sort of aim for the middle. As a pricing guide.
You actually follow a rule of thumb that a lot of people follow. And in a lot of instances, you'd actually be correct. Do you necessarily need to go out there and buy the most expensive oil filter out there because that automatically makes it the best? No, not necessarily. And that's why I said that's something that's kind of difficult for me to communicate, you know, on the radio. But it's really what it comes right down to it is you know, if you really want to do your own oil changes, which I actually encourage most people to do, because I think that it helps promote that feeling of responsibility for that car, and thus they're, you know, you're going to take better care of it. Call your dealer and just say, hey, I want to do my own oil change. I don't necessarily want to drive all the way into Anchorage, if your dealer is in Anchorage.
Sure.
To get an oil filter, can you recommend a brand for me? Lots of times, if you get a good knowledgeable person on the parts counter, they'll tell you an acceptable brand that can interchange for the actual manufacturer brand, because most vehicle manufacturers don't actually make their own oil filters.
Right.
Somebody else supplies them for them.
And they put the name on it.
Yeah. So they're going to know the name of those manufacturers and maybe kind of help guide you along in your quest to get an oil filter.
Okay. Well, good. I think we've covered a lot of things oil. Before we finish up, did you have any last comments to share with people?
The question does come to what to do with the oil after you do the oil change. The local dump or recycling center will take it. Make sure you dispose of your engine oil properly. Don't just dump it out in the backyard or...
Right.
Yeah.
Or spread it on your gravel driveway.
Yeah.
Keep the dust down.
Yeah. That's something that's been very, you know, effectively used in the past, but, you know, it's about responsibility too. You want to make sure you're taking care of your surroundings and disposing of that oil properly, and not necessarily what's easiest.
Okay. All right. Well, Toby Edmonds, thank you very much for coming in today. We had a musical beginning, and of course, we're going to go out with a musical ending. And then we'll be back next week for another edition of You Oughta Know.
You've been listening to You Oughta Know with Toby Edmonds. This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.